2 weeks and continues with 4 remote days per week for an additional 2 weeks until Tuesday, September 19th, when he requests a full-time remote trial of 2 weeks while he is visiting relatives out of state. This removes the boss's ability to call you to the office. This is critical for making the first jump overseas. Sherwood's team is in the middle of a project that requires his expertise, and he is prepared to quit if his boss refuses. He realizes that just as you want to negotiate ad pricing close to deadlines, getting what you want often depends more on when you ask for it than how you ask for it. Though he would prefer not to quit, his income from shirts is more than enough to fund his dream lines of Oktoberfest and beyond. His boss acquiesces, and Sherwood doesn't have to use his threat of quitting. He goes home that evening and buys a $524 round-trip ticket, less than 1 week's shirt sales, to Munich for Oktoberfest. Now he can implement all the time savers possible and hack out the inessentials. Somewhere between drinking wheat beer and dancing in Lederhosen, Sherwood will get his work done in fine form, leaving his company better off than prior to 80-20 and leaving himself all the time in the world. But hold on a second. What if your boss still refuses? Then they force your hand. If upper management won't see the light, you'll just have to use the next chapter to fire their asses. An alternative, the hourglass approach. It can be effective to take a longer period of absence up front in what some NR have termed the hourglass approach, so named because you use a long proof of concept up front to get a short remote agreement and then negotiate back up to full-time out of the office. Here's what it looks like. 1. Use a pre-planned project or emergency, family issues, personal issue, relocation, home repairs, whatever, that requires you to take 1 or 2 weeks out of the office. 2. Say that you recognize you can't just stop working and that you would prefer to work instead of taking vacation days. 3. Propose how you can work remotely and offer, if necessary, to take a pay cut for that period, and that period only, if performance isn't up to par upon returning. 4. Allow the boss to collaborate on how to do it so that he or she is invested in the process. 5. Make the 2 weeks off the most productive period you've ever had at work. 6. Show your boss the quantifiable results upon returning and tell him or her that without all the distractions, commute, etc., you can get twice as much done. Suggest 2 or 3 days at home per week as a trial for 2 weeks. 7. Make those remote days ultra productive. 8. Suggest only 1 or 2 days in the office per week. 9. Make those days the least productive of the week. 10. Suggest complete mobility. The boss will go for it. Q&A. Questions and actions. Recently I was asked if I was going to fire an employee who made a mistake that cost the company $600,000. No, I replied. I just spent $600,000 training him. Thomas J. Watson, founder of IBM. Liberty means responsibility. That is why most men dread it. George Bernard Shaw. While entrepreneurs have the most trouble with automation since they fear giving up control, employees get stuck on liberation because they fear taking control. Resolve to grab the reins. The rest of your life depends on it. The following questions and actions will help you to replace presence-based work with performance-based freedom. 1. If you had a heart attack, and assuming your boss were sympathetic, how could you work remotely for 4 weeks? If you hit a brick wall with a task that doesn't seem remote compatible, or if you predict resistance from your boss, ask the following. What are you accomplishing with this task? What is the purpose? If you had to find other ways to accomplish the same, if your life depended on it, How would you do it? Remote conferencing? Video conferencing? GoToMeeting? GoToMyPC? DimDim.com? Mac? Or related services? Why would your boss resist remote work? What is the immediate negative effect it would have on the company, and what could you do to prevent or minimize it? 2. Put yourself in your boss's shoes. Based on your work history, would you trust yourself to work outside of the office? If you wouldn't, listen to elimination again to improve production and consider the hourglass option. 3. Practice environment-free productivity. Attempt to work for 2 to 3 hours in a cafe for 2 Saturdays prior to proposing a remote trial. If you exercise in a gym, attempt to exercise for those 2 weeks at home or otherwise outside of the gym environment. The purpose here is to separate your activities from a single environment and ensure that you have the discipline to work solo. 4. Quantify current productivity. If you have applied the 80-20 principle, set the rules of interrupting interruption, and completed related groundwork, your performance should be at an all-time high in quantifiable terms, whether customers served, revenue generated, pages produced, speed of accounts receivable, or otherwise. Document this. 5. Create an opportunity to demonstrate remote work productivity before asking for it as a policy. This is to test your ability to work outside of an office environment and rack up some proof that you can kick ass without constant supervision. 6. Practice the art of getting past no before proposing. Go to farmers markets to negotiate prices. Ask for free first-class upgrades. Ask for compensation if you encounter poor service in restaurants. And otherwise, ask for the world and practice using the following magic questions when people refuse to give it to you. What would I need to do to desired outcome? Under what circumstances would you desired outcome? Have you ever made an exception? I'm sure you've made an exception before, haven't you? If no for either of the last two, ask, why not? If yes, ask why. 7. Put your employer on remote training wheels. Propose Monday or Friday at home. Consider doing this or the following step during a period when it would be too disruptive to fire you, even if you were marginally less productive while remote. If your employer refuses, it's time to get a new boss or become an entrepreneur. The job will never give you the requisite time freedom. If you decide to jump ship, consider letting them make you walk the plank. Quitting is often less appealing than tactfully getting fired and using severance or unemployment to take a long vacation. 8. Extend each successful trial period until you reach full-time or your desired level of mobility. Don't underestimate how much your company needs you. Perform well and ask for what you want. If you don't get it over time, leave. It's too big a world to spend most of life in a cubicle. Lifestyle design in action. Consider trying Earth Class Mail, a service that you can reroute all your mail to, at which point they scan and email you everything that comes in, giving you the option of recycling, shredding junk, getting a scan of the contents, or having specific items forwarded to you or someone you designate. I have not personally used it yet. We'll be testing it out this month in preparation for an upcoming trip in May. But a friend and author in Portland swears by them and knows the CEO. Seems they've gotten good press, and the idea seems far better than relying on friends or family who, if they're anything like my friends or family, will surely drop the ball at some point. Natalie. I also use greenbyphone.com to process checks electronically that come in through my Earth Class Mail account. They charge $5 a check, but I live in San Diego. My Earth Class Mail office address is in Seattle, and I bank in Ohio. It works great. Andrew. To add to your excellent list, we've traveled just like that for several years. Sweet. I'd like to add my modifications as a female traveler and a new mom. 16-month-old baby. Personal favorites? 1. Athleta carries excellent, light, quick-dry clothing that hold up well to sports, but still look very fashionable. Skorts are a must for looking feminine, but being fully covered for hiking and steep pyramid steps. You know what I mean, ladies. Just a note, a slightly longer length will serve you well in a lot of countries, as well as tankini tops and swim skirts for swimming. 2. Fresh and Go toothbrush is simple to use. 3. Marsona sound machine for drowning out unfamiliar noises is a must. Regularly use with baby at home too, so when they hear the sound, they know it's sleep time. This has been a lifesaver for us on many trips, and we now use it regularly at home for better sleep. No more changing hotels mid-trip to avoid noise. And I know we have to travel light, but with a baby, a lot of things are non-negotiable. These make for smoother sailing. 1. Peanut shell sling in black fleece. It's more comfy than the cotton, and you can pop baby in and out wherever you are, from birth to 35 pounds. I never take mine off. It's part of my outfit. 2. Peapod plus portable tent. This is baby's main bed at home and travel, so baby has the same sleep place everywhere we go, and the flaps give all travel parties privacy. Great from small babies to 5-year-olds. I can still jam this onto a little wheeled carry-on and pack mine and baby's minimal clothing around it. 3. Go-Go Kids Travel Mate. Great for wheeling car seat up to the gate for gate check or use on plane. 4. Britax Diplomat Car Seat is small, but kids can use it from birth to approximately 4 years old. Make sure the wheeled carry-on bag you get is one size smaller than the allowed carry-on size so you don't get bumped to check the bag in if the plane is full. You can always nicely argue, reason, bat your eyelashes that you will put the bag in your foot space. Also, very helpful to give baby something to sip or munch on during takeoff and landing so yours isn't the baby screaming from ear pain. Happy travels. Carol. Preempting the boss. Common concerns about remote work. In the linked article, Cisco acknowledges that remote work arrangements are here to stay, yet lists a set of security issues. It makes sense to preemptively research solutions so that you are armed and ready if your employer raises these concerns. newsroom.cisco.com/DLLS/2008/prod_020508.html. Contributed by Raina. 13. Beyond Repair. Killing Your Job. All courses of action are risky, so prudence is not in avoiding danger. It's impossible. But calculating risk and acting decisively. Make mistakes of ambition and not mistakes of sloth. Develop the strength to do bold things, not the strength to suffer. Niccolo Machiavelli, The Prince. Existential Pleas and Resignations Mad Libs by Ed Murray. Dear preferred deity of choice, I realized something very adjective today as I was washing my animal, and that something is this. You are an adverb, cruel, personal, expletive pronoun. Last night, after drinking 7 shots of least favorite hard liquor and snorting enough drug to make politician blush, it became clear. It really is them and not me. I am the one who is completely helpless state of being when it comes to the favorite color, personal relationships in my life, and yet I share my innermost type of candy with no one else on this adjective planet, because they are all insulting adjective extinct animals. I emotion them all, and I hope they meet a adjective demise choking on a platter of their own Applebee's appetizer. This adjective catharsis made me feel smiley emotion, and strangely alone, simultaneously. How can I connect with these herd animals I am surrounded by on a daily basis? I am just so sick of, synonym for crying, in the part of your house every day, maybe it would help if I shoved a fistful of vegetables into my bodily orifice. It makes my heart verb when I see the defeat in my parents' body parts, and it becomes adverb clear that they love the type of car more than sibling's name. Maybe I should stab my genitalia with a sharp object. Today I have to buy a noun which will serve as a metaphor and as a timeless adjective symbol for the expletive-faced servitude I am bound to in this life, no more in control than the most adjective-minded of farm animals. I am trying desperately to st-blank-p myself from active violent act all of my co-workers except person in the room. I've always wanted to forceful sexual act him, her, it. I didn't ask to be verb. If reincarnation does exist, please leave me out of it. Some jobs are simply beyond repair. Improvements would be like adding a set of designer curtains to a jail cell. Better, but far from good. In the context of this chapter, job will refer to both a company, if you run one, and a normal job, if you have one. Some recommendations are limited to one of the two, but most are relevant to both. So we begin. I have quit 3 jobs and been fired from most of the rest. Getting fired, despite sometimes coming as a surprise and leaving you scrambling to recover, is often a godsend. Someone else makes the decision for you, and it's impossible to sit in the wrong job for the rest of your life. Most people aren't lucky enough to get fired and die a slow spiritual death over 30 to 40 years of tolerating the mediocre. Pride and punishment. If you must play, decide on 3 things at the start: the rules of the game, the stakes, and the quitting time. Chinese proverb. Just because something has been a lot of work or consumed a lot of time doesn't make it productive or worthwhile. Just because you are embarrassed to admit that you're still living the consequences of bad decisions made 5, 10, or 20 years ago shouldn't stop you from making good decisions now. If you let pride stop you, you will hate life 5, 10, and 20 years from now for the same reasons. I hate to be wrong, and sat in a dead-end trajectory with my own company until I was forced to change directions or face total breakdown. I know how hard it is. Now that we're all on a level playing field, pride is stupid. Being able to quit things that don't work is integral to being a winner. Going into a project or job without defining when worthwhile becomes wasteful is like going into a casino without a cap on what you will gamble. Dangerous and foolish. But you don't understand my situation. It's complicated. But is it really? Don't confuse the complex with the difficult. Most situations are simple. Many are just emotionally difficult to act upon. The problem and the solution are usually obvious and simple. It's not that you don't know what to do. Of course you do. You are just terrified that you might end up worse off than you are now. I'll tell you right now, if you're at this point, you won't be worse off. Revisit fear setting and cut the cord. Like pulling off a Band-Aid, it's easier and less painful than you think. The average man is a conformist, accepting miseries and disasters with the stoicism of a cow standing in the rain. Colin Wilson, British author of The Outsider, New Existentialist. There are several principal phobias that keep people on sinking ships, and there are simple rebuttals for all of them. 1. Quitting is permanent. Far from it. Use the Q&A questions in this chapter and Chapter 3, Fear Setting, to examine how you could pick up your chosen career track or start another company at a later point. I have never seen an example where a change of direction wasn't somehow reversible. 2. I won't be able to pay the bills. Sure you will. First of all, the objective will be to have a new job or source of cash flow before quitting your current job. Problem solved. If you jump ship or get fired, it isn't hard to eliminate most expenses temporarily and live on savings for a brief period. From renting out your home to refinancing or selling it, there are options. There are always options. It might be emotionally difficult, but you won't starve. Park your car in the garage and cancel insurance for a few months. Carpool or take the bus until you find the next gig. Rack up some more credit card debt and cook instead of eating out. Sell all the crap that you spent hundreds or thousands on and never use. Take a full inventory of your assets, cash reserves, debts, and monthly expenses. How long could you survive with your current resources or if you sold some assets? Go through all expenses and ask yourself, if I had to eliminate this because I needed an extra kidney, how would I do it? Don't be melodramatic when there is no need. Few things are fatal, particularly for smart people. If you've made it this far in life, losing or dropping a job will often be little more than a few weeks of vacation, unless you want more, prior to something better. 3. Health insurance and retirement accounts disappear if I quit. Untrue. I was scared of both when I was eliminated from TrueSan. I had visions of rotting teeth and working at Walmart to survive. Upon looking at the facts and exploring options, I realized that I could have identical medical and dental coverage, the same provider and network, for $300 to $500 per month. To transfer my 401k to another company, I chose Fidelity Investments, was even easier. It took less than 30 minutes via phone and cost nothing. Covering both of these bases takes less time than getting a customer service rep on the phone to fix your electric bill. 4. It will ruin my resume. I love creative nonfiction. It is not at all difficult to sweep gaps under the rug and make uncommon items the very things that get job interviews. How? Do something interesting and make them jealous. If you quit and then sit on your ass, I wouldn't hire you either. On the other hand, if you have a 1 to 2 year world circumnavigation on your resume or training with professional soccer teams in Europe to your credit, two interesting things happen upon returning to the working world. First, you will get more interviews because you will stand out. Second, interviewers, bored in their own jobs, will spend the entire meeting asking how you did it. If there is any question of why you took a break or left your previous job, there is one answer that cannot be countered. I had a once-in-a-lifetime chance to do exotic and envy-producing experience and couldn't turn it down. I figured that with 20 to 40 years of work to go, what's the rush? The Cheesecake Factor. Would you like me to give you a formula for success? It's quite simple, really. Double your rate of failure. Thomas J. Watson, founder of IBM. Summer, 1999. Even before I tasted it, I knew something wasn't quite right. After 8 hours in the refrigerator, this cheesecake still hadn't set at all. It swished in the gallon bowl like a viscous soup, chunks shifting and bobbing as I tilted it under close inspection. Somewhere a mistake had been made. It could have been any number of things. 3 1-pound sticks of Philly cream cheese, eggs, stevia, unflavored gelatin, vanilla, sour cream. In this case, it was probably a combination of things and the lack of a few simple ingredients that generally make cheesecake a form of cake. I was on a no-carbohydrate diet, and I had used this recipe before. It had been so delicious that my roommates wanted their fair share and insisted on an attempt at bulk production. Hence began the mathematical shenanigans and problems. Before Splenda and other miracles of sugar imitation came on the scene, the hardcore used stevia, an herb 300 times sweeter than sugar, One drop was like 300 packets of sugar. It was a delicate tool, and I wasn't a delicate cook. I had once made a small handful of cookies using baking soda instead of baking powder, and that was bad enough to drive my roommates to puke on the lawn. This new masterpiece made the cookies look like fine dining. It tasted like liquid cream cheese mixed with cold water and about 600 packets of sugar. I then did what any normal and rational person would do. I grabbed the largest soup ladle with a sigh and sat down in front of the TV to face my punishment. I had wasted an entire Sunday and a boatload of ingredients. It was time to reap what I had sown. 1 hour and 20 large spoonfuls later, I hadn't made a dent in the enormous batch of soup, but I was down for the count. Not only could I not eat anything but soup for 2 days, I couldn't bring myself to even look at cheesecake, previously my favorite dessert, for more than 4 years. Stupid? Of course, it's about as stupid as one can get. This is a ridiculous and micro example of what people do on a larger scale with jobs all the time. Self-imposed suffering that can be avoided. Sure, I learned a lesson and paid for the mistake. The real question is, for what? There are two types of mistakes, mistakes of ambition and mistakes of sloth. The first is the result of a decision to act, to do something. This type of mistake is made with incomplete information, as it's impossible to have all the facts beforehand. This is to be encouraged. Fortune favors the bold. The second is the result of a decision of sloth, to not do something, wherein we refuse to change a bad situation out of fear despite having all the facts. This is how learning experiences become terminal punishments, bad relationships become bad marriages, and poor job choices become lifelong prison sentences. Yeah, but what if I'm in an industry where jumping around is looked down upon? I've been here barely a year, and prospective employers would think, would they? Test assumptions before condemning yourself to more misery. I've seen one determinant of sex appeal to good employers. Performance. If you are a rock star when it comes to results, it doesn't matter if you jump ship from a bad company after 3 weeks. On the other hand, if tolerating a punishing work environment for years at a time is a prerequisite for promotion in your field, could it be that you're in a game not worth winning? The consequences of bad decisions do not get better with age. What cheesecake are you eating? Q&A. Questions and actions. Only those who are asleep make no mistakes. Ingvar Kamprad, founder of IKEA, world's largest furniture brand. Tens of thousands of people, most of them less capable than you, leave their jobs every day. It's neither uncommon nor fatal. Here are a few exercises to help you realize just how natural job changes are and how simple the transition can be. 1. First, a familiar reality check. Are you more likely to find what you want in your current job or somewhere else? 2. If you were fired from your job today, what would you do to get things under financial control? 3. Take a sick day and post your resume on the major job sites. Even if you have no immediate plans to leave your job, post your resume on sites such as Monster.com and CareerBuilder.com, using a pseudonym if you prefer. This will show you that there are options besides your current place of work. Call headhunters if your level makes such a step appropriate, and send a brief email, such as the one below, to friends and non-work contacts. Dear all, I am considering making a career move and am interested in all opportunities that might come to mind. Nothing is too outrageous or out of left field. If you know what you want or don't want on some level, feel free to add, I am particularly interested in, or I would like to avoid. Please let me know if anything comes to mind. Tim. Call in sick or take a vacation day to to complete all of these exercises during a normal 9-to-5 workday. This will simulate unemployment and lessen the fear factor of non-office limbo. In the world of action and negotiation, there is one principle that governs all others. The person who has more options has more power. Don't wait until you need options to search for them. Take a sneak peek at the future now, and it will make both action and being assertive easier. 4. If you run or own a company, imagine that you have just been sued and must declare bankruptcy. The company is now insolvent and you must close up shop. This is something you must legally do, and there are no finances to entertain other options. How would you survive? Tools and tricks. Considering options and pulling the trigger. I resign. I-resign.com. This site provides everything from non-quitting options, work leave, vacations, to sample resignation letters and second life job hunting advice. Don't miss the helpful discussion forums and hysterical web consultant from London letter. Opening retirement accounts. If you want an advisor and don't mind some fees, Franklin Templeton, franklintempleton.com, 800-527-2020. American Funds, americanfunds.com, 800-421-0180. If you will do your own investing and want no-load funds, Fidelity Investments, fidelity.com, 800-343-3548. Vanguard, vanguard.com, 800-414-1321. Health insurance for self-employed or unemployed, in descending order of reader endorsement. E-health insurance, ehealthinsurance.com, 800-977-8860. Aetna, aetna.com, 800-MY-HEALTH. Kaiser Permanente, kaiserpermanente.com, 866-352-0290. American Community Mutual, american-community.com, 800-991-2642. 14. Mini retirements. Embracing the mobile lifestyle. Before the development of tourism, travel was conceived to be like study, and its fruits were considered to be the adornment of the mind and the formation of the judgment. Paul Fussell, Abroad. The simple willingness to improvise is more vital in the long run than research. Rolf Potts, Vagabonding. Upon Sherwood's return from Oktoberfest, dazed from killing neurons, but the happiest he's been in 4 years, the remote trial is made policy, and Sherwood is inducted into the world of the new rich. All he needs now is an idea of how to exploit this freedom and the tools to give his finite cash near infinite lifestyle output. If you've gone through the previous steps, eliminating, automating, and severing the leashes that bind you to one location, it's time to indulge in some fantasies and explore the world. Even if you have no ache for extended travel or think it's impossible, whether due to marriage or mortgage or those little things known as children, this chapter is still the next step. There are fundamental changes I and most others put off until absence or preparation for it forces them. This chapter is your final exam in Muse design. The transformation begins in a small Mexican village, in a parable that's been shared in various forms around the world. Fables and Fortune Hunters. An American businessman took a vacation to a small coastal Mexican village on doctor's orders. Unable to sleep after an urgent phone call from the office the first morning, he walked out to the pier to clear his head. A small boat with just one fisherman had docked, and inside the boat were several large yellowfin tuna. The American complimented the Mexican on the quality of his fish. "How long did it take you to catch them?" the American asked. Only a little while, the Mexican replied in surprisingly good English. Why don't you stay out longer and catch more fish? The American then asked. I have enough to support my family and give a few to friends, the Mexican said as he unloaded them into a basket. But what do you do with the rest of your time? The Mexican looked up and smiled. I sleep late, fish a little, play with my children, take a siesta with my wife, Julia, and stroll into the village each evening, where I sip wine and play guitar with my amigos. I have a full and busy life, senor. The American laughed and stood tall. Sir, I'm a Harvard MBA and can help you. You should spend more time fishing and with the proceeds buy a bigger boat. In no time you could buy several boats with the increased haul. Eventually you would have a fleet of fishing boats. He continued, instead of selling your catch to a middleman, you would sell directly to the consumers, eventually opening your own cannery. You would control the product, processing, and distribution. You would need to leave this small coastal fishing village, of course, and move to Mexico City, then to Los Angeles, and eventually New York City, where you could run your expanding enterprise with proper management. The Mexican fisherman asked, but, senor, how long will all this take? To which the American replied, 15, 20 years, 25 tops. But what then, senor? The American laughed and said, that's the best part. When the time is right, you would announce an IPO and sell your company stock to the public and become very rich. You would make millions. Millions, senor? Then what? Then you would retire and move to a small coastal fishing village where you would sleep late, fish a little, play with your kids, take a siesta with your wife, and stroll to the village in the evenings where you could sip wine and play your guitar with your amigos. I recently had lunch in San Francisco with a good friend and former college roommate. He will soon graduate from a top business school and return to investment banking. He hates coming home from the office at midnight, but explained to me that if he works 80-hour weeks for 9 years, he could become a managing director and make a cool $3 to $10 million per year. Then he would be successful. Dude, what on earth would you do with $3 to $10 million per year? I asked. His answer? I would take a long trip to Thailand. That just about sums up one of the biggest self-deceptions of our modern age, extended world travel as the domain of the ultra-rich. I've also heard the following. I'll just work in the firm for 15 years, then I'll be partner and I can cut back on hours. Once I have a million or two in the bank, I'll put it in something safe like bonds, take $80,000 a year in interest, and retire to sail in the Caribbean. I'll only work in consulting until I'm 35, then retire and ride a motorcycle across China. If your dream, the pot of gold at the end of the career rainbow, is to live large in Thailand, sail around the Caribbean, or ride a motorcycle across China, guess what? All of them can be done for less than $3,000. I've done all three. Here are just two examples of how far a little can go. The dollar figures in this chapter are all from a period immediately following President Bush's re-election in 2004, which correlated to the worst dollar exchange rates of the last 20 years. $250 U.S. 5 days on a private Smithsonian tropical research island with three local fishermen who caught and cooked all my food and also took me on tours of the best hidden dive spots in Panama. $150 U.S. 3 days of chartering a private plane in Mendoza wine country in Argentina and flying over the most beautiful vineyards around the snow-capped Andes with a personal guide. Question. What did you spend your last $400 on? It's two or three weekends of nonsense and throw-away, forget-the-work-week behavior in most U.S. cities. $400 is nothing for a full 8 days of life-changing experiences. But 8 days isn't what I'm recommending at all. Those were just interludes in a much larger production. I'm proposing much, much more. The birth of mini-retirements and the death of vacations. There is more to life than increasing its speed. Mohandas Gandhi. In February of 2004, I was miserable and overworked. My travel fantasy began as a plan to visit Costa Rica in March 2004 for 4 weeks of Spanish and relaxation. I needed a recharge, and 4 weeks seemed reasonable by whatever made-up benchmark you can use for such a thing. A friend familiar with Central America dutifully pointed out that it would never work, as Costa Rica was about to enter its rainy season. Torrential downpours weren't the uplifting jolt I needed, so I shifted my focus to 4 weeks in Spain. It's a long trip over the Atlantic, though, and Spain was close to other countries I'd always wanted to visit. I lost reasonable somewhere shortly thereafter and decided that I deserved a full 3 months to explore my roots in Scandinavia after 4 weeks in Spain. If there were any real-time bombs or pending disasters, they would certainly crop up in the first 4 weeks, so there really wasn't any additional risk in extending my trip to 3 months. 3 months would be great. Those 3 months turned into 15, and I started to ask myself, why not take the usual 20 to 30-year retirement and redistribute it throughout life instead of saving it all for the end? The alternative to binge traveling. Thanks to the interstate highway system, it is now possible to travel from coast to coast without seeing anything. Charles Kuralt, CBS News reporter. If you are accustomed to working 50 weeks per year, the tendency, even after creating the mobility to take extended trips, will be to go nuts and see 10 countries in 14 days and end up a wreck. It's like taking a starving dog to an all-you-can-eat buffet. It will eat itself to death. I did this 3 months into my 15-month vision quest, visiting 7 countries and going through at least 20 check-ins and check-outs with a friend who had negotiated 3 weeks off. The trip was an adrenaline-packed blast, but like watching life on fast forward. It was hard for us to remember what had happened in which countries, except Amsterdam. I refer, of course, to the amazing bike riding opportunities and famous pastries. We were both sick most of the time, and we were upset to have to leave some places simply because our pre-purchased flights made it so. I recommend doing the exact opposite. The alternative to binge travel, the mini-retirement, entails relocating to one place for 1 to 6 months before going home or moving to another locale. It is the anti-vacation in the most positive sense. Though it can be relaxing, the mini-retirement is not an escape from your life, but a re-examination of it, the creation of a blank slate. Following elimination and automation, what would you be escaping from? Rather than seeking to see the world through photo ops between foreign but familiar hotels, we aim to experience it at a speed that lets it change us. This is also different from a sabbatical. Sabbaticals are often viewed much like retirement, as a one-time event. Savor it now while you can. The mini-retirement is defined as recurring. It is a lifestyle. I currently take 3 or 4 mini-retirements per year, and know dozens who do the same. Sometimes these sojourns take me around the world. Oftentimes they take me around the corner. Yosemite, Tahoe, Carmel, but to a different world psychologically, where meetings, email, and phone calls don't exist for a set period of time. Purging the demons. Emotional freedom. This is the very perfection of a man, to find out his own imperfection. St. Augustine, 354 AD to 430 AD. True freedom is much more than having enough income and time to do what you want. It is quite possible, actually the rule rather than the exception, to have financial and time freedom, but still be caught in the throes of the rat race. One cannot be free from the stresses of a speed and size-obsessed culture until you are free from the materialistic addictions, time-famine mindset, and comparative impulses that created it in the first place. This takes time. The effect is not cumulative, and no number of 2 week, also called TOOWEAK, coined by Joel Stein of the LA Times, sightseeing trips can replace one good walkabout. By all means, go ahead and take a post office celebratory trip and go nuts for a few weeks. I know I did. Rock on. Ibiza and glow sticks, here I come. Have some absinthe and drink lots of water. Following that, sit down and plan an introspective mini-retirement. In the experience of those I've interviewed, it takes 2 to 3 months just to unplug from obsolete routines and become aware of just how much we distract ourselves with constant motion. Can you have a 2-hour dinner with Spanish friends without getting anxious? Can you get accustomed to a small town where all businesses take a siesta for 2 hours in the afternoon and then close at 4 o'clock p.m.? If not, you need to ask why. Learn to slow down. Get lost intentionally. Observe how you judge both yourself and those around you. Chances are that it's been a while. Take at least 2 months to disincorporate old habits and rediscover yourself without the reminder of a looming return flight. The financial realities. It just gets better. The economic argument for mini retirements is the icing on the cake. 4 days in a decent hotel or a week for two at a nice hostel costs the same as a month in a nice posh apartment. If you relocate, the expenses abroad also begin to replace, often at much lower cost, bills you can then cancel stateside. Here are some actual monthly figures from recent travels. Highlights from both South America and Europe are shown side by side to prove that luxury is limited by your creativity and familiarity with the locale, not gross currency devaluation in third world countries. It will be obvious that I did not survive on bread and begging. I lived like a rock star, and both experiences could be done for less than 50% of what I spent. My goal was enjoyment and not austere survival. Airfare. Free. Courtesy of Amex Gold Card and Chase Continental Airlines MasterCard. Muses are low maintenance but often expensive in one or both of two tactical areas, manufacturing and advertising. Shop for providers of both that are willing to accept credit cards as payment and negotiate this up front if necessary by saying, "Rather than trying to negotiate you down on pricing, I just ask that you accept payment by credit card. If you can do that, we'll choose you over competitor X." This is yet another example of a firm offer and not a question that puts you in a stronger negotiating position. For a detailed explanation of how I multiply points for traveling using concepts like piggybacking and recycling, search for both terms on 4hourblog.com. Housing. Penthouse apartment on the equivalent of New York's Fifth Avenue in Buenos Aires, including house cleaners, personal security guards, phone, energy, and high-speed internet, $550 U.S. per month. Enormous apartment in the trendy Soho-like Prenzlauerberg district of Berlin, including phone and energy, $300 U.S. per month. Meals. 4 or 5-star restaurant meals twice daily in Buenos Aires, $10 U.S., $300 U.S. per month. Berlin, $18 U.S., $540 US per month. Entertainment. VIP table and unlimited champagne for 8 people at the hottest club, Opera Bay in Buenos Aires, $150 US. $18.75 US per person times 4 visits per month equals $75 US per month per person. Cover, drinks, and dancing at the hottest clubs in West Berlin, $20 US per person per night times 4 equals $80 US per month. Education. 2 hours daily of private Spanish lessons in Buenos Aires 5 times per week, $5 US per hour times 40 hours per month equals $200 US per month. 2 hours daily of private tango lessons with 2 world-class professional dancers, $8.33 US per hour times 40 hours per month equals $333.20 US per month. 4 hours daily of top-tier German language instruction in Nollendorfplatz, Berlin, $175 US per month, which would have paid for itself even if I had not attended classes, as the student ID card entitled me to over 40% discounts on all transportation. 6 hours per week of mixed martial arts, MMA training, at the top Berlin Academy, free, in exchange for tutoring in English, 2 hours per week. Transportation. Monthly subway pass and daily cab rides to and from tango lessons in Buenos Aires, $75 US per month. Monthly subway, tram, and bus pass in Berlin with student discount, $85 US per month. 4 week total for luxury living. Buenos Aires, $1,533.20, including round-trip airfare from JFK, with a one-month stopover in Panama. Nearly one-third of this total is from the daily one-on-one instruction from world-class teachers in Spanish and tango. Berlin, $1,180, including round-trip airfare from JFK and a one-week stopover in London. How do these numbers compare to your current domestic monthly expenses, including rent, car insurance, utilities, weekend expenditures, partying, public transportation, gas, memberships, subscriptions, food, and all the rest? Add it all up and you may well realize, like I did, that traveling around the world and having the time of your life can save you serious money. Fear factors. Overcoming excuses not to travel. Traveling is the ruin of all happiness. There's no looking at a building here after seeing Italy. Fanny Burney, 1752-1840, English novelist. But I have a house and kids. I can't travel. What about health insurance? What if something happens? Isn't travel dangerous? What if I get kidnapped or mugged? But I'm a woman. Traveling alone would be dangerous. Most excuses not to travel are exactly that. Excuses. I've been there, so this isn't a holier-than-thou sermon. I know too well that it's easier to live with ourselves if we cite an external reason for inaction. I've since met paraplegics and the deaf, senior citizens and single mothers, homeowners and the poor, all of whom have sought and found excellent, life-changing reasons for extended travel instead of dwelling on the million small reasons against it. Most of the concerns above are addressed in the Q&A, but one in particular requires a bit of preemptive nerve calming. It's 10 o'clock p.m. Do you know where your children are? The prime fear of all parents prior to their first international trip is somehow losing a child in the shuffle. The good news is that if you are comfortable taking your kids to New York, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., or London, you will have even less to worry about in the starting cities I recommend in the Q&A. There are fewer guns and violent crimes in all of them compared to most large U.S. cities. The likelihood of problems is decreased further when travel is less airport and hotel hopping among strangers and more relocation to a second home. a mini-retirement. But still, what if? Jen Errico, a single mother who took her two children on a 5-month world tour, had a more acute fear than most, one that often woke her at 2 o'clock a.m. in a cold sweat. What if something happens to me? She wanted to prime her kids for worst-case scenario, but didn't want to scare them to death. So, like all good mothers, she made it a game. Who can best memorize the itineraries, hotel addresses, and mom's phone number? She had emergency contacts in each country whose numbers were loaded into the speed dial of her cell phone, which had global roaming. In the end, nothing happened. Now she's planning to move to a ski chalet in Europe and send her kids to school in multilingual France. Success begets success. She was most afraid in Singapore, and in retrospect, it was where she had the least reason to be worried. She took her kids to South Africa, among other places. She was scared because it was the first stop, and she was unaccustomed to traveling with her kids. It was perception, not reality. Robin Malinsky Rummel, who spent a year traveling through South America with her husband and 7-year-old son, was warned by friends and family not to visit Argentina after their devaluation riots in 2001. She did her homework, decided that the fear was unfounded, and proceeded to have the time of her life in Patagonia. When she told locals that she was originally from New York, their eyes widened and jaws dropped. "I saw those buildings blow up on TV. I would never go to such a dangerous place." Don't assume that places abroad are more dangerous than your hometown. Most aren't. Robin is convinced, as are other NR parents, that people use children as an excuse to stay in their comfort zones. It's an easy excuse not to do something adventurous. How to overcome the fear? Robin recommends two things. One, before embarking on a long international trip with your children for the first time, take a trial run for a few weeks. Two, for each stop, arrange a week of language classes that begin upon arrival and take advantage of transportation from the airport if available. The school staff will often handle apartment rentals for you, and you will be able to make friends and learn the area before setting off on your own. But what if your concern isn't so much losing your children, but losing your mind because of your children? Several families interviewed for this audiobook recommended the oldest persuasive tool known to man, bribery. Each child is given some amount of virtual cash, 25 to 50 cents, for each hour of good behavior. The same amount is subtracted from their accounts for breaking the rules. All purchases for fun, whether souvenirs, ice cream, or otherwise, come out of their own individual accounts. No balance, no goodies. This often requires more self-control on the part of the parents than the children. How to get airfare at 50 to 80% off. This is not an audiobook on budget travel. Most of the cost-cutting recommendations found in such guides are designed with the binge traveler in mind. For someone embarking on a mini-retirement, an extra $150 for hassle-free airfare, amortized over 2 months, is a better deal than 20 hours of manipulating frequent flyer points on an unknown airline or chasing questionable deals. Following 2 weeks of research, I once bought a one-way standby ticket to Europe for $120. I arrived at JFK brimming with enthusiasm and confidence. Look at all these schmucks paying retail. And 90% of the participating airlines refused my ticket. Those that didn't were booked for weeks solid. I ended up staying in a hotel for 2 nights for a $300 tab, filing a complaint with Amex and eventually calling 1-800-FLY-EUROPE from the JFK terminal in frustration. I bought a round-trip ticket to London on Virgin Atlantic for $300 and left an hour later. The same ticket cost more than $700 a week earlier. After 25 countries, I found a few simple strategies that get you 90% of the possible savings without wasting time or producing migraines. 1. Use credit cards.